This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today is the wonderful Joe Keegan and amazing Justin Ozer. Joe, hello, how are you?
Amy, we've only got 2 weeks to go.
Yay!
And then I can like reach out and I'll be able to physically touch you. It's amazing.
Yes!
I'm so excited.
Oh. Ugh, very excited. Star Trek Las Vegas is coming up, listeners. Mm-hmm. So,
and yes. If you don't go, you have to get your life in order and just go and experience Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yes. If you can't make it this year, come next year. Now, Justin, we're going to see you there too as well. Woohoo!
That's right. I will be there at Star Trek Las Vegas as we record this. It's a couple weeks. When this comes out, it'll only be a little over a week. So very, very exciting. And listeners, if you're there, you can see all three hosts of Earl Grey potentially if you catch us all hanging out together in the hallway.
Because we will be doing that.
We will. This is so exciting, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Amy, are you going to cry? Are you going to cry again? You're going to cry, aren't you?
No, I'm going to wait.
Save the tears. Save the tears.
Yeah. Got some fun things planned, so very excited.
And you're baking a cake. Can't wait for that.
Yeah, we're going to talk. I've got an idea.
I had an idea that you could do like a scale model of the Enterprise D, like screen accurate, but when you cut into it, you take a slice, you can see the blueprints.
Oh, right.
Like the deck plans.
And it's a big enough cake, you can slice into it and see all 42 decks, right?
All 42 decks, like all 3,300 bedrooms.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yep. Cetacean ops, all sorts.
Yeah.
The gymnasium.
Well, I don't know. Amy might need some time. Maybe next year.
I know. You've only got 2 weeks, so better get baking.
Yeah, I've got 2 weeks to perfect it. All right. Yes. Well, hey, Joe, we have an iTunes giveaway. Why don't you remind our listeners about it?
So, yeah, if you listen to Earl Grey, you will already know about our iTunes giveaway. But from now or from the beginning of July until the 31st of August or August 31st, we are doing an iTunes giveaway. So if you do a review on iTunes and leave a star rating, you will be put into the draw for an amazing gift, which has been donated by our listener and associate producer, Chris Tribuzio. So yeah, the gift that has been, or the prize for the iTunes giveaway, is a set of TNG collector cards. If you go onto the Babel conference, you'll be able to see some photos of them, and they look really good. I might actually have to enter using a pseudonym. Is that allowed?
Well, no, it is not. Hosts of Trek FM are not eligible.
Damn the small print.
Or their families. No.
Okay.
Chris wants to give it away to a listener, not a host.
I listen. Okay, that's fair enough. Yes, these are the way these competitions go.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, listeners, we do have some Babel Conference feedback from our EG282, where we did our Lost Episodes Part 8. So, Justin, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so that was the episode where we talked about Genius's Pain and the alternate version of Generations. So Vera Bible said, love the episode. I agree with the general consensus that the episode did not sound that great. And she's talking about Genius's Pain. I kept envisioning the scene from the TNG episode Cost of Living, where Lwaxana takes Alexander to the holodeck and there are mimes, a fire breather, that head in a bubble, etc. It's Star Trek trying to be wacky and funny, and most of the time that does not work. All the listener suggestions sounded much more enjoyable. Amy, you brought up how they should have used Troy more, other than as an object of desire, and I 100% agree. I think that statement could apply to most of the series. Both she and Beverly were woefully underused / misused. Well, thank you, Vera, for your comments. I think I agree with all of them. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was, you know, and I put in the Babel conference, like, I was thinking of Cost of Living and that floating bubble and just how silly that episode was. And, you know, it's not one of my go-to episodes because of that, but I appreciate what it was trying to do. So Vera, I definitely agree with you.
I kind of like the silliness of Cost of Living and all the stuff that's going on. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, because it tempers and, you know, is in contrast to the heart of the episode.
Right. Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
I think we maybe all thought of Cost of Living when we were doing that episode. I couldn't remember the name of the episode, Cost of Living, when we were recording, so didn't mention it. But just the pranky nature of those alien guys and the wackiness of the holodeck characters they've got. Amy, I agree. It's not one of my go-to episodes. It kind of irritates me, so I tend to skip over it. Sorry. So, Kimberly Lawler says, thanks for a nice episode. I think the reason I didn't like either Lost episode is they didn't have any obvious character development angle or particularly interesting sci-fi concept. Ron Moore and Brannon Braga were usually good for hitting both angles. I have major issues with the way they handled both in the actual Generations movie. But at least they tried. And they did a fantastic job with All Good Things, of course. With the Generations concept, I think Justin is right in that many people would have been disappointed with only a hologram of Kirk, just as they were disappointed with the Enterprise finale for similar reasons. Yeah, thanks for your comment, Kimberly. Do you know what? My knowledge of like kind of showrunners and producers and directors is kind of really limited. So when you mentioned Ron Moore and Brannon Braga, that is not something that had ever occurred to me, that they'd kind of been on point in terms of their sci-fi content, concepts and character development angles. So new knowledge to me. Anytime, I think we discussed that during the episode when they were toying with the idea of having a hologram for Kirk. I think we mentioned the Enterprise finale and how it just had been paying kind of lip service, but without any real point to it. And I don't think fans would have appreciated that very much.
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you're in the theater and you're expecting this big thing crossing over between the two different crews and it was just a hologram of Kirk, that would have been pretty disappointing. As far as the Enterprise finale, like, I think the first time that I saw Enterprise, I really hated it. But in subsequent rewatches, I've come to enjoy aspects of it and know where it's coming from. Certainly far, far from a favorite, but I probably like it more than most. Oh, well, mm-hmm. I just admitted that.
Yeah. Well, we have Greg Malumbi who writes, love the episode. This Lost episode seemed too basic for me. As for a TNG character in a movie, what about Tomalak? I still want a real Romulan-dominated Trek movie. Greg, I completely agree with you. I really wanted a Romulan movie. I was hoping The Insurrection was going to be that Romulan. So I definitely am with you. And I commented on the Babel conference. I'm like, what about Nemesis? But we all know that's not really the Romulan-natured movie that we really want.
Yeah, it's not an intense focus. I mean, Romulans are in it, but it really focuses more on Remans and this human clone, Shinzon, right?
Yep.
So I'm hoping certainly in the Picard series, it seems like maybe we might get a Romulan main character. Hoping for that, I think that would be really cool because they need to be more explored.
I think they've cast a young male actor and there's a rumor circulating, or maybe it's just a feeling that I have, that he's going to be a young kind of Romulan refugee that's in
Picard's possible. Gang. Here's the thing. They're going to probably reveal some details at San Diego Comic-Con, yes. which happens before this episode airs. So whatever speculation we have, I don't know. We'll see. We'll know more very, very soon, which is exciting.
I would have loved a Tomalak related episode or movie. I really love the actor that played Tomalak, Andreas Katsoulis. I'm also a big Babylon 5 fan, and I really loved his character of Jakar. So yeah, Tomalak is a good suggestion, Greg.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and that came from when we had a bonus question about TNG characters we want to see in the movies that didn't appear there. So thank you again, listeners, and Greg, for listening that far and for our bonus questions on that. So, well, we have Matthew Bell, who says, I always like these dives into the lost episodes, but the exploration of the original generation script was what I love the most. For years, I've only heard snippets of this abandoned movie idea, and while I was really hoping for a more full synopsis, it's still good to hear what has survived. Regarding my comment on the podcast about the blueprints, I have a confession. I dug my set of blueprints out of the attic last night and realized that my years-old memory had somewhat overestimated the crew quota. Oops. The actual number of beds is 3,392. I stand by my original point, though. Why do crew ever have to share quarters? So thank you, Matthew, for your comments. First, glad you enjoyed us delving into that kind of lost generation script. It was interesting, the insights into it, although it wasn't as full as some of the other things we've seen. So I'm glad you enjoyed that. And your comment about the blueprints. So you had commented that some years ago, I guess many years ago, you had counted up all of the different crew quarters and found that it was about 5,000. Apparently you dug it out, overestimated it somewhat, but you do have a pretty exact number here, 3,392. So we do believe you that you counted them all and you were just misremembering a bit, but still that's quite a bit more than the crew complement. And it is a good point. Why do crew have to share quarters if there's far more than 1,000 different places that people can sleep? So
I'm trying to think of an example where we saw crew share quarters that weren't in some kind of family unit, and I can't think of anything. I can imagine like cadets being bunked together, maybe, but
yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, the thing about TNG though is that we saw primarily the officers and what was happening with them. We didn't really see the enlisted personnel or what was happening. I mean, one place where we've definitely seen sharing of crew quarters is Discovery, right? Where you have Burnham and Tilly sharing quarters, presumably others do as well. I'm trying to think if you really see that on some of the other series. I don't know if you do, but again, we're mostly following officers, so that might be different.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting point for sure.
Yeah, Matthew, thank you for digging out your blueprints. That's really some dedication, and still counting each bed, 3,392. That's pretty impressive. Yes. So thank you, Matthew.
Special commendation to Matthew Bell for actually
doing
that insurmountable task. 3,392 stars for Matthew Bell.
That's right.
Well, let's get on to today's discussion. Very excited to continue our deleted scene. So Justin, why don't you get us going?
Yeah, so first of all, this will be the second time we're doing this. The first time it was seasons one and two, because there was basically just one thing we found for season one, and for season two is a combination of some things on the Blu-rays, as well as things from TrekCore. Now, as far as season three, there are no deleted scenes on the Blu-ray at all. But there is still something for us to talk about, because TrekCore again came through some years ago because they get these tapes from people, I think, that worked on the show that has some deleted scenes that for whatever reason didn't make it onto the Blu-rays. So we actually have quite a few across some different episodes. So the episodes we'll be talking about are Evolution, The Bonding, The Defector, and Sins of the Father. And there's quite a few scenes to talk about here. Now, as I was going through it, because I hadn't really watched these before, really delved into these, a lot of them are fairly minor, but I think there's still some interesting stuff to talk about here. And listeners, I should also let you know, because this is on TrekCore, in the show notes, we'll put links to where you can find all of these and watch them for yourselves. So let's talk first about evolution. So when Trekcore did this, it was in two parts. It had one that had six scenes and one that had five different scenes. So we'll talk about the one that had six scenes first. So as listeners might remember, Evolution is the first episode of season three, and that's all about the nanites and Dr. Stubbs and his research and the conflict that happens there, which I think is a pretty good episode. So we're going to talk about the different scenes here. I guess I should say first, Joe, you weren't on the last one for deleted scenes. So, like, did you have an expectation coming in about this?
To expect the unexpected.
Okay.
Possibly. Yeah, every podcast I do is something new and interesting because I've been doing it for less than 6 months, I think. So it's still very new and I'm still learning a lot. So I hadn't seen any of these deleted scenes from season three because they're not on the Blu-rays, obviously. And I usually try and watch all the additional footage that we're given on Blu-rays and kind of DVD editions of things that I buy.
Yeah. And as we go on, there will be more across other seasons on the Blu-rays. But Amy, had you seen these ones that Trekcore has before?
Well, give mad credits to Trekcore. I mean, the way that they have put the deleted scenes in meshed into is just, it's really very well done. And I would recommend you listeners to go check it out because it's very worthwhile, I feel. The one that I did see, because I watched The Orville with Scott Grimes, and he is in Evolution. So I did see those two deleted scenes that he was in preparation for watching The Orville and doing a podcast about that.
Yeah. And listeners, if you watch these, it's a pretty interesting experience because what Trekcore has done is they've taken the time to give you the context of where it is within the aired episode. So you'll see the HD version and then you'll know you're in the deleted scene because it looks like an old videotape and sometimes it'll kind of go back and forth. So it's pretty easy to tell like what was inserted in. So let's talk about Evolution. So the first scene that's here, it's toward the beginning of the episode, and in the aired episode, Picard is talking with Stubbs on the bridge, and you know they're standing by to launch this thing. So there's a deleted scene where Stubbs is talking to Wesley. He's asking him how long the experiment will last. Wesley gives him a pretty precise answer, a billionth of a second. Less than a billionth of a second. You're right. It wasn't quite as precise, but that's a very small period of time. So Wesley then says he's read all of Stubbs' published works. And Stubbs is kind of a bit taken aback by that. And then it kind of goes back into the aired episode for the launch. So it's kind of this short little thing, but you do see that Wesley, I think later in the episode, you find out he's kind of read something in Stubbs' unauthorized biography, but this is like he's read all of his published work, so he's kind of totally into it. So let me see. What did you guys think about this little scene, Joe?
I think everything we see of Dr. Stubbs in all these deleted scenes helps to make him a more rounded character, make him appear more human. From memory, the way we see him in the actual aired episode, he just seems like some weird stereotype of a kind of a grumpy scientist that's got this monocular vision that his science is the most important thing, and come hell or high water, he wants to get the science done. So all the little snippets, especially I think the next one that we'll talk about in sickbay, it really does him a service and make him appear more likable. And I think in this one where he's talking to Wesley, he does come across a little bit more human and personable. So I think Evolution in general, all these deleted scenes are the scenes where I wish they'd actually made it into the episode.
Okay. And Amy, go ahead.
With this scene, I found it interesting that they're setting Wesley up again to sort of know everything, you know, like Dr. Stubbs questions him and yes, he knows the answer because Wesley always knows the answer. And I wish that they would have kept that because it again sort of plays into, as we talk a little further about the importance that Wesley is in this episode.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think I tend to agree. It's like a short little bit, but it just, yeah, it gives Stubbs a little more rounded character, and it shows you even more how much Wesley is like into his work. So that's the first one. It's just kind of a short sequence. So then the second one, which I kind of love because of the outfits, but anyway, so Wesley's kind of in a hallway. He's coming down the hall. There's three kids in very brightly colored suits. So outfits. So, I mean, listeners, if you've seen like an image of this or you've seen this deleted scene, it's another one of those cases in Star Trek where there's kind of wacky futuristic clothing. They're kind of, one of them has a blue outfit, the other one's kind of, I don't know, hot pink, the other one's kind of like a
lemon,
bright yellow,
yeah,
lemon color. So there's these three kids that come down the corridor, and they come by to say hi. And as you mentioned before, Joe, Scott Grimes is one of the kids. He kind of says hi. You know, one of the girls says they're going to the holodeck to ski in Switzerland, and they're inviting Wesley for that. Wesley can't go. He has to check on Stubbs in sickbay. So again, adding like he's devoted to making sure Stubbs is okay and his work and all that. So then this Scott Grimes character who's named Eric kind of takes Wesley aside and he's like, I kind of have a problem here. I've got two beautiful girls in a holodeck program. I need you to come with me. I guess it's like a double date kind of thing. And Wesley says, no, he has too much to do. And, you know, Eric's kind of disappointed as he walks away. So that's kind of the whole little sequence. But let me start with you, Amy. What did you think of this particular scene?
I wish that it was there, number one, because those skiing outfits are hilarious.
Classic, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, again, it sets up Wesley as a kid. And I really don't remember seeing a lot of kids his age. I mean, outside of, you know, applying for the Academy, you know, but here we see teenagers on board the Enterprise doing normal things. And I think we do miss out on seeing that. So I wish they would have kept that. And it's just great to see Scott Grimes because I know him as Malloy on the Orville.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And actually, Joe, before I go to you, I just want to, I mean, I think you're right, Amy, and Trekhor does point that out here, that up until this point, the only other kids we've seen are younger than Wesley. You don't see like teenagers his age. So it would have been nice to see him interact with people his own age. And you can also see how he's different. They're like, hey, let's have fun skiing on the holodeck. He's like, no, I got adult stuff, guys. You know, yeah. So it kind of shows he's separated out there. But Joe, what did you think of this little scene?
Yeah, in terms of Wesley's choice, you can see that it's kind of, the choice kind of tears him up. And he's got that kind of Starfleet professionalism about him, where Scott Grimes' character says, I really need you to come along on this date. There's only a fire to keep us warm, and there's going to be an avalanche that's going to keep us in the log cabin.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really corny. But you can see Wesley's going, no, I really can. I've got duties, and they're more important than kind of having fun in the holodeck, which is good for the character to have done that, I think. I do agree with Amy, they should have kept that in. I can imagine being a teenager on a ship with children and grown adults. You end up as some kind of dysfunctional, malformed young adult, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
With no people the same age as you. Interesting about the ski outfits, the one that Scott Grimes is wearing, the blue stripey thing.
Uh-huh.
You can actually see that in an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Really?
And it's hanging in Garak's tailor shop, like on display.
Oh, wow.
Just as you go in the door.
Okay.
Wow.
That's cool.
You've done your memory alpha digging, I see.
I think it wasn't me, it was Ewan. Ewan spotted it and some digging.
Oh.
I've got a PA for my podcasting now, so...
Very cool. Yeah. So I would have liked to keep this in. I mean, I think as we talk about this, back then they had to be pretty exact in the time for the episode. So they did have to do these little cuts. I do wonder if nowadays when it can be more variable, and you see that with Discovery where, you know, you've had episodes all the way from like 37 minutes to over an hour. If it was variable like that, they could have kept things in like this, but some of them had to go. But yeah, it is kind of a shame for that one. So, moving on to the next scene, which is a little bit later, it's Dr. Stubbs in sickbay. So when you see this, it starts out with the aired part that you're in sickbay and the nurse is asking Stubbs to, well, actually, there's a little deleted part where the nurse is asking him to lay down. And then there's the aired scene where Wesley kind of sees Stubbs, and Stubbs saying they're a dynamic team and and Beverly saying it's good to be back, Stubbs saying, you know, he wouldn't want his mother in space. Then it goes into a little deleted part there. And it's interesting for some of these because it's just like one line and little things. So Stubbs is saying that he loved his mother dearly, and Crusher asking, you know, if it hurts when she's doing something, I think, on his back. Goes back to the aired scene, and Stubbs is saying his mother was a formidable woman, and Wesley says that he knows that. And I think this is where Stubbs is surprised to find out that Wesley read his unauthorized biography because he knows this detail about his mother. So then there's another deleted part where and Stubbs is talking about something, I think, in his unauthorized biography that he totally denies, a story about the consulate's wife on Belderon. We were just good friends. So it's just kind of like these little things here where you're finding out a little bit more about Stubbs. And I think, as you said before, Joe, maybe making him a little more rounded, a little more human. So what do we think about this one, Joe?
Keep it. I like that. Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, it serves to make him kind of give the character more depth and make him more likable, because in the third episode, he's not a likable person at all. And all these, this, the bit about the consulate's wife and those details, it kind of serves to kind of make him a character you kind of want to keep around, and edit that deleted scene back into the episode. So okay. It's really annoying. Why do they need 15 or 16 minutes of adverts in old-fashioned TV?
Because that helped to support the show and pay for it.
Adverts. Does anybody ever watch an advert? An ad break is time for to go in and make a cup of tea.
Well, I can say when, you know, I'm streaming things, I love to go for services that have no commercials because I want to avoid that. But I do watch TV at my mother-in-law's house. She's like 88 years old, so she watches network TV and all of that. So we're there. She's watching the commercials. We are too, because we're there with her. So actually see quite a bit. Nice. Amy, what do you think?
Yeah, so on this one, I think it's okay to leave out. I think what they do show with Stubbs, like, he's not, he has issues with women. Obviously going back to his mother, and then it sort of permeates through the deleted scene. So I'm sort of glad that they took that out, 'cause I was like, what, you know, especially when we get to the second part.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think it makes him a little bit more egotistical, and that he's not likable, and maybe that's adds to the suspense and buildup of the show, but I'm fine leaving his irritation with women out of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, and we'll see that more. There's one that comes later that I would have liked left out, but you may have made a mention of this, but also Trekkor says here that there was some dialogue that was filmed but cut in a later conference lounge scene. So we don't have the video of that, but have the script where Troy is saying that he doesn't like women very much. And Data says, odd. The research material in Dr. Stubbs includes not a few references from gossip columns. It suggests females find him quite attractive. And Troy says, not this one. Actually, I think that would have been great if that was left in, because I think you're right, Amy. There is this thing that can go on also where in some of this deleted stuff where they're trying to make him like this ladies' man or something, which is a little weird. Okay. Well, let's keep going. The next scene, it actually starts with an aired part in the observation lounge in order to give you some context, where Troy's saying Stubbs' nonchalance is studied and practiced, and saying he'd rather tell the truth. He's telling the truth when he says he'd rather die than leave. And then it cuts over to this deleted scene in sickbay. So you see Crusher in sickbay, and Eric and one of the girls, teenage girls you've seen before, return. So she's been injured. There was some kind of accident on the holodeck. The ground seemed to fall away, but that shouldn't happen in the holodeck. You shouldn't really be able to get hurt. So Crusher contacts engineering and says to close the holodecks until further notice. which I think is interesting because I don't think otherwise you see like the doctor saying to close the holodecks. And she's saying they've had these different control problems. The girl has a fracture that Crusher's going to try to heal. Then the nurse who's there asks if she wants hot chocolate. And the girl kind of smiles to say, yeah, it's weird. A nurse is like, so your broken bone's being treated. Would you like hot chocolate? But anyway.
Oh, come on. You're not going to read the quote?
I don't. Oh, I don't have the specific quote. How does it go?
The nurse asks Annette, the girl with the injured leg, it's like, you look like you could use something warm inside you.
Oh, right. Which is a super awkward, weird line.
I know. Who says that?
You should use something warm inside of you. And instead of like, would you like a hot beverage or something?
Yeah.
But anyway, the implication is she's offering her hot chocolate or something like that. Annette also says Wes was going to come along. It's a good thing he didn't. And Crusher kind of wasn't aware of this thing that happened. Eric's saying it's a last minute thing. Annette's saying they don't see Wes as much now that he's on the bridge, which gives some interesting context. So the nurse goes to the replicator to get this hot chocolate. And what I should say before I describe this is when you're watching these, it's without music, it's without sound effects or anything. You just see like the raw footage. So you see this actress like go up to the thing and she's just like, ah, and she's just like screaming and falls down. It feels like super weird. So something's happened to like electrocute her at the replicator or something. But I mean, I know the character's supposed to be suffering, but I laughed out loud because I didn't expect it because she just kind of goes a little crazy and falls down. So the nurse isn't breathing, but Crusher manages to revive her. So like this is interesting, I think, for a couple of reasons, because you get some context that, you know, Wes isn't spending as much time with these teenagers anymore. And you also see that there's a holodeck malfunction. There's this issue with the replicator, whereas in the aired episode, the nanites are only affecting Stubbs. And then with this, they're affecting other people on the ship. So it kind of feels more dangerous. Amy, what did you think of this scene?
Again, this one definitely should have been left in. We need to see more of Beverly. And here she is doing her job. I really like this in part. You know, she's helping Annette and healing her leg. She's giving the command to shut down the holodecks, like using her authority. And I really appreciated seeing that, making that command decision. And then going and saving the nurse's life, you know. And there has been, you know, crap given for her that, you know, Crusher isn't the best doctor. She's always killing her patients. Well, no, here she's saving her patient, saves the nurse's life. And that's always good to see. And I agree with you completely. Like Beverly being gone for a year at Starfleet Medical comes back and is getting this insight. So we're learning, you know, about Wesley and Beverly in this deleted scene. And she's a little taken back and saddened, I think, that Wesley is sort of losing his childhood because he's now on the bridge and has, like you had mentioned, these Starfleet professional obligations and responsibilities. So this is a very good scene. One thing I wrote literally in my note, I'm like, crazy lady screaming at replicator. I'm like, I was so shocked. But you're right. We don't have the special effects. You know, maybe something drastic would have happened to her electrocution or something like you said. So, but yeah, that was so funny to watch. I was like, oh my gosh, what is she doing?
And it's always funny when you're watching these because you can hear people shuffling. You can hear like the doors just like opening. They're tapping their chest. Nothing's coming out. They're just tapping it. Like the hypospray comes up. Like you don't hear anything. They're just pressing something. So it's just kind of funny to... It's kind of cool to see it before all the special effects and the music. But what did you think of this one, Joe?
It spoils the illusion of like Star Trek for me because I hear and I see all the effects and I want to believe that that is how it was filmed. They just set up a camera and they filmed the action happening. I know it's not true. And I know that like the deleted scenes as how it would have looked when they filmed it, but I kind of wanted there to be all the special effects. I have to start at the end though and mention that nurse woman that I assumed again she got electrocuted, but that's literally the most overacted melodramatic scene. I laughed like Justin. It was hilarious. I did write something down. She reminded me of the Futurama episode. Was it the Blue Harvest one? The Star Wars Futurama, possibly. the intergalactic proton-powered electrical tentacled advertising droids.
Now, those I've only seen a couple episodes, so okay. I probably wouldn't know.
You know those inflatable things you get at car dealerships, and they have the arms, and
they wave about in the air?
She reminded me of one of those.
Oh my goodness.
Swirling
yeah.
about.
I can see that.
Again, I liked I can't really think of anything else apart from the flailing arm woman. I liked that more detail about Wesley kind of losing out. And now that his mum is in on it, what does she do with that information as a concerned parent when his kind of personal life with his friends has been affected because he's been used as essentially slave labor, I suppose, child labor. She should have won an Oscar for that scene, that nurse.
It was pretty great. So one other thing is, with this deleted scene and the deleted scene in the corridor, basically you're not really seeing any focus on these teenage friends. I think TrekCore points out here the only time that you see them is there's a closing scene in 10 Forward, and you know, Crusher's watching Wesley and his friends from across the room. So you don't really get to know those characters because both of those things are deleted. And I think sometimes in these things, if they delete one, they'll delete another one that has the character. So because there's things that are threading through and they have to kind of deal with both of them. But I think it's pretty interesting. It would have been interesting. You're right, Amy, to see Crusher like saving someone's life. Yeah. All right. So let's go to the next scene. You can tell, listeners, there's lots from Evolution here. So this is a scene that is on the bridge. And so Picard is telling Worf to advise everyone to stay in their quarters unless they're on duty. So there are these malfunctions that are happening, and Picard's being really concerned. There's an interesting line where he says, priority be access to all power components, whatever that means. So Worf is saying that it's possible it's not a computer breakdown. Riker's saying that sensors show no life in the system. And it's funny, it keeps cutting back to Wesley. He looks like he's like guilty or like worried because he knows he might have caused this thing. So there's a couple cuts back and forth to that. Troy's sensing no life forms or feelings of ill will, but she says she's not attuned to every life form. Riker says it seems like there's something going on. And a little bit later, I kind of noticed this, and it's funny. So Picard's saying it like if it's true that there's some, you know, presence or something, they're making a damn good job of it, which is interesting. But I think for this one, it's like if you cut out the stuff with all the malfunctions, you probably cut out this as well. And it's a lot of like, what's happening? I don't know. What's happening? I don't know. So I don't think this one's too necessary. But what do you think, Amy?
You know what? This is the one that I really feel should have been left in.
Okay.
Because I think that it adds a lot of suspense and adds to the plot. Like, this is dangerous. And especially with Worf putting in right. his opinion that it's an attack, like, then your mind is thinking, yeah, what if it is an attack? And so I just think it adds to the suspense. And so I would have kept it.
Okay. But you would have need to have also kept the one before that has like the holodeck malfunction, the replicator. They really go together.
Yeah, I wanted that one in too.
Oh, okay. All right. Joe, what do you think?
I think Amy and I are going to disagree again. I don't know that it added really all that much. See, when they do technobabble, I think everybody, when it comes to technobabble, has kind of a threshold. When before the line, they accept the technobabble and it makes sense in their headcanon. And sometimes it just goes over the line. It goes, that sounds a bit too weird to be technobabble. Like the priority be access to power components, however it is. I was like, we'd never really heard anything like that, and it didn't feel like something that they would say on the bridge. So I think for that reason, I'm taking that out, possibly.
Okay, that's fair. So let's go on to the next one, which is the last one in this first set on Evolution. There is more for Evolution after this. So this is a kind of a tiny little change. So Geordi's in engineering working on something. He's like putting something into place, power coupling or something. And Wesley's looking at a monitor and he says, hey, you got it. Nice going, Geordi. And Geordi kind of says, yeah. And then it goes into an aired episode where they're talking about how to bypass the computer core. I thought this one was weird, like Wesley saying "nice going, Geordi," when Geordi's the chief engineer, outranks him and all that. But Amy, what do you think?
Yeah, we can get rid of this one. We don't need Wesley saying "good job, Geordi." Like, yeah.
Joe.
He kind of makes Geordi seem a bit subordinate to Wesley.
Right.
I know he's got a kind of key role in this episode because it's his fault. But yeah, it's like he's forgotten the chain of command almost.
Yeah, it is weird. So I think we'll get rid of that one. All right, guys. So should we move on to the second half of deleted scenes from Evolution?
Do it.
All right. So this has five more deleted scenes. In the first deleted scene, so this is when I think Riker and Geordi are on the bridge. They're talking about manually restarting things and opening a hangar door. And in the aired episode, this like march plays Stars and Stripes Forever on the bridge. And then it actually goes into a deleted scene where Troi says she's sensing no emotions. Worf says the enemy is without honor. And then power's kind of resumed on the bridge, and it goes back to the aired episode where Picard wants to leave if they can. And Data, I think, is making some repeated attempts to restore power. So it's a little scene. But Joe, what do you think?
The best thing about that episode is Data's explanation of the music. But John Philip Sousa, who is like a 20th century composer of America,
19th, yeah.
Yeah, so he just goes on, like Picard says, be quiet, essentially. As for the deleted scene, doesn't do anything. I noticed when Data's trying to restore power, up the top of his top right-hand side of his console, he's got a big, giant, yellow rectangular, I'm getting my shapes mixed up, big yellow rectangular button, and he keeps just hitting this one button.
Oh yeah,
to restore power. I was like, surely you've got a whole array of buttons and you're an Android interface with it somehow. And
you usually see them tapping away at a lot of stuff, but he was just like kept tapping at one button, right?
Yeah super annoying.
Amy?
Yeah, for this one, I don't think we need it again. Troi's not sensing anything. I mean, it's a machine, and so
yeah, they were just kind of going at that point, but I don't know if they need to emphasize it.
Yeah, I mean, we already get enough crap that her only purpose is to sense things, and so.
Yeah. Okay, well, moving on to the next one. So a little bit later in the episode, it starts with the aired part where Picard's saying he'll have the head of Stubbs if anyone is harmed, and Data says that Stubbs' actions have really harmed everyone, but it's proven that the nanites have a collective intelligence. So then it goes into the deleted part of it where Troi's saying she senses a vague presence now. It's kind of like a primitive sense of self-preservation, and Crusher's arguing not to destroy the nanites because they have some kind of evolved emotional growth, and Worf saying the ship's at risk. So then it goes back to the aired episode where Worf wants to exterminate these things. So it's a little part with Troi and Crusher and Worf giving their opinions on what's going on here. So Joe, what did you think of this one?
So I feel for this deleted scene, I feel like it was already in the episode in some way. I think they just kind of repeated some of the details that we see. So when I was watching, I was like, I'm sure I've seen this. So for that reason, I'm thinking, leave it out, because there's enough of what's in the deleted scene already in the episode that we don't need to have it in.
Yeah.
They would just be repeating themselves over and over.
Kind of think so. What do you think, Amy?
Okay, so Joe, we're Amy's just going to have to continue disagreeing. This, I think, is important to have, because now we have Troi, you know, she's my favorite, but she's now sensing life. So it's showing a progression, you know, throughout. And yeah, we didn't really see every deleted scene where she says she can't sense, you know, these beings, but so we're going from can't sense, I can't feel anything, to finally, yes, I do feel something. So it's showing a progression that these nanites are going through. And I think it is important to keep.
Okay. That's
we're each entitled to our opinion. That's fine.
Yeah. So going on to the next one. So it starts with the aired episode. Stubbs is in his quarters, and Troi comes in to talk to him. And I think he's annoyed with Troy and says she can't resist and she only wants to help. And he's saying, yes, to break the shell, get in touch with my true feelings. It goes into the deleted scene. And here is exactly what Stubbs says. He says, what is the preoccupation that women have with demystifying me? It must be the challenge. Climb me because I'm there. And then it goes back to the aired episode where Troy says she's only worried about a state of mind. I absolutely hate that line that Troy has, especially like, and that's just like an awkward way to put it. It's just, it's gross. I don't like it. Climb me because I'm there. Demystify me like he's this some kind of god or something. I definitely wanted to forget about this one, Amy.
Yeah, this one did not make me happy. And I wrote down, I'm like, that women, and I'm like, women are trying to demystify? No, that would be, you would say, I don't like that counselors try. It's not the fact that she's a woman. She's doing her job, dude. So get over the fact that she's a woman. She's a counselor. It could have been appropriate. Oh, I hate that counselors try and demystify me and try and figure me out. Well, that's their job. It's not the fact that she's a woman.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Maybe it could have been rephrased like, you know, what's the preoccupation that counselors have with trying to demystify me? It must be the challenge. And stop there. Because also the part where he says, like, climb me because I'm here, like he's some mountain or challenge. And there's something like kind of sexual about the phrasing. It's just wrong. I don't know why they even filmed that. But
keep it deleted. Yes.
Anyway, Joe, you can disagree with us if you want. But
oh, no, I want to agree for once. he's just a misogynistic jerk, isn't he? He just not a nice guy at this point, which is why I liked the deleted scenes from earlier, to give him some balance. We hate him because he's this horror of a human, but we like him because he's got a human side. Like that, what is that line, climb me because I am there? He's got this kind of god-sized ego to him, as if he's some kind of Olympian on top of a mountain, he's so high above everybody else that people have to climb to get up to his level.
It's really weird. But it's interesting. Like they were doing some things maybe to round him out a little, and they just like pushed it way too far because they pushed him in the direction of being somebody that you really hate because of like his views towards women. So as Trekcore says, a wise removal because man, imagine if that was in the aired episode. So
not good.
Mm-hmm. All right. So moving on to the next one. So, Wesley's in sick bay, Stubbs comes in. So this whole thing is a deleted scene. I think they just start from there. So Wesley's asking how he is. Stubbs says he's fine and he just wants to get rid of the pest, talking about the nanites. And Stubbs says not to be harsh with him until he's walked in his shoes. Stubbs says they're similar in their obsession. Wesley is kind of obsessed with the academy. He's obsessed with his egg, his experiment, and that others won't understand. Now, Wesley says he wants to go to the academy, but if that doesn't work out, he has other things to live for. And that kind of takes Stubbs a little bit by surprise, I guess, because he's so obsessed with things. And he says, oh, of course you do. And then walks away. I think this one is kind of interesting in Wesley saying like, hey, if I don't go to the academy, it's not the end of the world. I can do other things, which kind of ties into the other parts where he has, you know, teenage friends and maybe has other interests and things. But Joe, what do you think about this one?
I like the fact that kind of Wesley's comment that there's other things that he could do opens up the Star Trek universe a bit. And it's not just if you're human, the only thing you can do is to join Starfleet. He's obviously a science major, so he could go and work at the Daystrom Institute or go to the Vulcan Science Academy or something. So there's a whole array of other things, other career options for him. Was this deleted scene required because it kind of brings Stubbs and Wesley together again? Because they're both kind of key parts of the story. Wesley, well, Dr. Stubbs' big experiment that went all horribly wrong, and then Wesley because he caused it because of his nanites. I think I would maybe leave it in because it's helping tie up that relationship between those two. Possibly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really like the Wesley Stubbs, you know, because it started early on in the episode and some of the deleted scenes we talked about, you know, that Wesley's read all of his works and his autobiography and you know, so I like that Stubbs is trying to bring them together and it's like, look, we're the same, and trying to get an ally during this whole fiasco. And I just, it's brilliant when Wesley's like, well, I have other things to live for. And I was like, that's exactly right. And it does add another layer to the Stubbs character that I think needs to, because I sort of felt sorry for Stubbs after watching this deleted scene.
Yeah, I mean, because he's so obsessed with it, he almost can't imagine something else. And Wesley, this teenager, is like, hey, there's more to life than the thing that you're obsessed about right now, you know? So yeah, I agree. It's actually pretty good. Okay, so moving on to the next one. So a little bit later in the episode, we're on the bridge. Data's doing an analysis of the nanites, you know, in the back section of the bridge, as he does sometimes. And Picard asks if they can understand them. And it goes into a deleted scene where Picard is seeing if they can ask the nanites for a ceasefire. And Data puts it in and says the answer is no. Picard says to tell them it's critical for the nanites' survival and their own. Data puts that in. Answer is no. So Troy says there's little trust after the computer core incident. So that's in the aired episode where Stubbs was kind of sterilizing some of the nanites in the computer core. And then after that, it goes back to the aired episode where Picard is asking to bring Stubbs to the bridge. So let's talk about that part first. It was kind of together with another thing, but like asking the nanites some of these questions. Amy, what do you think?
I think, again, this needs to stay because, again, it's showing the progression. Like, first, we have Troy sensing life and that there is some consciousness there. And now we're getting another step in their progression that they are now communicating. Like, I really think that it needs to be in there to show that progression of the nanites.
So you're wanting to keep in a lot of stuff. Maybe if TNG was an hour-long show, you could have kept in all that stuff.
I know.
Evolution okay. Part 1 and Part 2.
Well, it could just be one episode. I mean, there's some Discovery episodes that are a full hour.
Oh, yeah, true. So. Nowadays.
Yeah. What do you think?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there is already, in the aired episode, scenes of them negotiating with the nanites. Is there not?
I'm trying to remember because it's been a while since I've seen the episode.
But not this direct, you know.
Because I'm sure I'd seen...
this direct communication.
I'm sure I've seen that before. Maybe I've seen the deleted scene before and I've just kind of inserted it into my knowledge about the episode. But yeah, Amy, we're 2 for 2. I agree with you again. Keep this in, even though I thought it was already in. Yeah, I liked it. See the Stubbs electrocution scene? I know that's already in the episode, but is that one of the only times we get to see the computer core in TNG?
I think it might be, if not one of the only times, the only time. It's very rare that you actually see that.
I like the set piece for that.
So, I mean, I could be wrong because I'm kind of looking through it, but I think the negotiation in the aired episode happens much later, where the nanites kind of come into Data's body and take him over, and that's when the negotiation starts right toward the end. This would have been earlier,
okay,
I think.
You might be right. Okay.
Yeah. So it might have been interesting to see. So then, like after that little deleted part, it goes to the aired episode, and Picard's asking to bring Stubbs up to the bridge. Then it goes into a deleted scene where Worf's saying the translator has its limits and he prefers to negotiate eye to eye with his enemy. And Picard says that won't be possible because they're nanites. Worf nods, and then it goes back to the aired episode with Stubbs walking with Riker to the bridge. So it's this little part where Worf is saying, like, we need to negotiate eye to eye, and Picard is like, you can't do that here. But Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, it's like, it's that Klingon cultural thing. Where I think in another episode that we're going to talk about today, Worf says something again, which paints the Klingon culture as kind of monolithic. He's talking about seeking revenge on a civilization that died thousands of years ago. And here he has to be able to see who he's negotiating with in the eye, which I'm just bored with that Klingon monolithic way.
Yeah, I agree. This one you could get rid of. I think by season three, we sort of already understand his, you know, Worf's desire to always be on the defensive or to go on the attack. And so for him wanting to look the enemy in the eye, like we understand and what his desire is. And so I'm fine with leaving it out. But if we're having an hour long episode, then I say leave it in because it does add to okay. what we know about Worf and it keeps him consistent.
Okay. Well, listeners, wow. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Evolution. There's 11 deleted scenes that we've looked at and we've talked about that for close to an hour. So there is more, as I said, for season three that we'll have to do in another part for the bonding, the defector and sins of the father. So you have that to look forward to. So it turns out this isn't about deleted scenes season three. It's about deleted scenes Evolution and all of the stuff that they, I mean, it's amazing. There was this much stuff that they cut out. So let's go ahead into our final thoughts then. So, you know, in taking a look at all of these deleted scenes for Evolution, Joe, like, what do you think or what have you learned or how might the episode have been different based on what you might have wanted to keep in?
Stubbs, if we'd put in the bits or if I had put in the bits that I wanted to put in and never mind the bits Amy wanted to delete or keep in, I think Stubbs might have come across as a more likable character. We agree to delete the whole I'm a mountain, climb me or whatever he says. I think if it was nowadays, like you said, it would have been an hour and 15 minute episode because there's so much good stuff that they had to delete out, which is a shame because they went to all that effort to film things and they don't just film things, it's expensive to produce a TV show. So,
but I think they had to make sure to have lots of extra stuff because they had to cut it down. They couldn't film it as if it was 45 minutes. They probably had to film it as if it was an hour or so, knowing that there'd be certain things they'd have to cut out or that wouldn't work. Yeah.
It's a shame.
It kind of is. So there's a lot of stuff like this out there. I'm just curious because you weren't on the last one. Have you seen the extended Measure of a Man where, you know, you have all that extra footage?
I don't think so. Measure of a Man, the one where Data is, they're going to take him away and experiment on him.
Yeah, that's right. And where Picard is defending his rights. So on the season two Blu-ray, if you go to Measure of a Man, there's a place where it says extended version. And it's, I think, like 13 minutes longer. And there's actually some really great stuff in there. You should check it out.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
but don't, I think there's two versions. There's like the regular extended and the hybrid. Do the regular extended because the hybrid is something else. But anyway, it's kind of a revelation to see some of that stuff. And we talked about it with Amy and Richard previously.
Thanks.
Okay. But yeah, it sounds like it was worthwhile talking about this though. So Amy, your final thoughts?
You know, after seeing these deleted scenes, it made me appreciate the episode better. Evolution isn't one that I mean, I remember it. Well, sometimes I get confused because the nanites, I get it confused with that other one.
The ugly bags of mostly water species or?
Yeah. Or the
exocomps.
Exocomps.
Yeah. Those all sort of blend in together. But this one, like you said, Joe, we get with the deleted scenes, a more rounded picture of Dr. Stubbs. And I like his development with Wesley Crusher. And how those two, he tries to, you know, continue to keep those two together, that they're similar. But these deleted scenes also show this great evolution between like Wesley and his mother, Wesley and his friends, you know, and we get to see Troy sensing a little bit more effectively and that progression of the little nanites. So I think the deleted scenes really add so much more to the episode, and I'm so glad to watch it to get a better appreciation of what the writers were trying to do with these characters and with the technology. I think it's very well worth including them.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I think it was really interesting. And there's like so many of these deleted scenes, although, you know, we've talked about them for close to an hour. But listeners, if you just go ahead and watch them straight through, it'll only take 15 minutes to look through the two parts. So you should definitely go and do that. So yeah, it was really interesting because there was all of this stuff to add to Stubbs' character. And most of it, again, with the exception of that climb me kind of thing and talking about women wanting to demystify him. The other stuff was really good. It was great to see Wesley with some teenage friends and kind of the pull of his Starfleet duty with wanting to hang out with his friends and, you know, Beverly seeing how her son has changed and that the nanites are affecting more than just Stubbs. I thought it was pretty interesting. There was a lot of good stuff to keep in. And I'm actually pleased that we got to talk about it for as long as we did, because some of these things when I was watching them seem kind of minor, but there's actually quite a lot to think about. So I'm glad that we did this. And listeners, again, we'll have more deleted scenes from season three. I know we have enough for at least another episode just on season three deleted scenes.
All right. Well, let's get to next week's episode preview, listeners. Now, I'm not going to be here, so what are you guys doing without me?
So me and Joe will have a guest on, Pierre LaRocco. So he wanted to talk about Kern, and we're going to talk about Kern's appearances in TNG as well as his one appearance on DS9. Now, I know, Joe, that you're not the biggest fan of Klingons, so you may just have to endure that, but there is a DS9 episode we get to talk about, so there's that, right?
I suppose Pierre's challenge is to turn me into a Klingon fan. I'm quite open to loving Klingons in the future.
Maybe he'll convince you, because I gave him some different topics and Kern was the one that he picked. So,
and it's Tony Todd who's terrifying.
Yep. Terrifyingly amazing.
Yes. And also terrifyingly terrifying.
Yeah. So you'll get to watch some stuff where you can get terrified. That's worth it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love being terrified at my wits. Yeah. Why not?
Okay, great.
Amy,
so
where's Amy going? Why is Amy not here? Is Amy gallivanting again?
It's still summer vacation, so yes, I am.
Our world traveler, Amy Nelson.
Yeah, you're the only teacher I know that has so many vacations.
Well, I will be going up to the Seattle area, listeners, so I don't know.
Okay.
And that's in the state of Washington.
Yes, that it is. Right. Well done.
Geography. Yes. Love it.
Well, it's been so much fun going over deleted scenes from the season three episode Evolution, but it isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, literary treks.
But in this case, I like the character in the fact that she's a counselor and a Vulcan, because when you go to a counselor, most of the time it's about your emotions or dealing with your emotions. So how ironic it is that a Vulcan is the person you go to figure out how to deal with emotional issues from a non-emotional person.
Earl Grey.
Episodic TV is really good for watching in bed before you go to sleep, because you can go to bed, watch a little 45-minute episode, and by the end, you're almost asleep. So it's like a nice little comfort blanket.
You're saying Star Trek puts you to sleep?
Yeah. Yes, actually, yes. Even though I love it, it does. If I didn't have it on the background, I probably wouldn't sleep, because I've become so used to it.
Interesting. So it's like a soothing presence.
Oh yeah, it's that background noise of life. Star Trek, the hum of the warp drive.
The Ready Room.
Do you feel like there are too many of these arcs, too many of these threads running through a 14-episode season? And I ask that because one of the more interesting stories to me, apart from the Red Angel, the big story, is the Stamets-Culber story. And I think that both the actors, Wilson Cruz and Anthony Rapp, have done an amazing job of portraying this story. The chemistry between them feels so real, and I've really connected with the emotions behind this story. But I feel shortchanged. I feel like we're only dipping in here and there just enough to remind us that that story is going on, whereas I would like to see it develop more. And I feel like maybe they're just trying to do too much in too little time.
Warp 5.
But I think Brandon's right. You can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Yeah, you can jump to Bound and have the same thing.
Because you could have him say, I want to leave, them find his replacement. Whatever, whatever happens in between, now he decides to stay and there's a problem because this guy wants to stay.
Which plays out all in Bound.
Correct. So I think I'm not going to be able to drive Brandon crazy as I want to. I will say no.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show, and if you do it by August 31st, you'll be entered into our contest to win those TNG collectible cards.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it will come right up.
So you guys want a bonus question?
No, a bonus. Yes.
Yes. So listeners, if you're hashtag still listening, you get bonus stuff. So here is my question to you guys. Have you known someone like Dr. Stubbs who is really obsessed with what they were doing to the possible detriment of others?
I don't think so. There is one university lecturer that I had who just wasn't a personable human at all. He was known for being quite cantankerous and just not a very jolly person. So we were kind of opposite people because, you know, I am light and he was darkness. I think him, although we didn't really have a personal relationship to any extent because I just avoided him at all costs. He will remain nameless.
Yes, but maybe they should be anonymous.
Yeah.
Amy?
Yes, I dated someone, and we will keep this anonymous. He was definitely driven, and he had reasons to, well, in his mind, I feel that he had reasons, and he was unaccepting of any other alternative solutions. And his solution was it, and it was to the detriment of our relationship. And it was very, very difficult. That is one relationship that is still very near and dear to my heart, but his drive separated us. It was to our detriment.
Oh, well. So we don't hate him because we could do the thing where we hate this person for you. And we could
I wish him all of the best, and I hope that he is successful because he has sacrificed a lot.
So we won't space him out the nearest airlock. That's fine.
There you go again, Joe. You hadn't wanted to kill anyone up until this point in the episode.
Oh, I wanted to kill Dr. Stubbs with the whole climb me on a pole thing or something. Like just not a bad death, maybe like being minced in a giant grinder.
Oh
my goodness, Joe. Wow.
Come on. I'm now known for this, so I might as well take it to the nth degree.
Yes. Own it.
I guess so. All right. So of course,
Justin, what about you?
Yeah, of course I asked this question. I didn't have an answer because I just spontaneously came up with it. But you know, I would say I've known some people in my life who were kind of obsessed with being famous in some way. And I really don't like that because, I don't know, there's something about how someone can be single-minded about trying to like get well-known for something or, you know, get the right contacts or climb over other people or whatever. Well, climb, maybe I shouldn't use, but in the context of this episode. But yeah, they'll remain anonymous. But there are some people that I've known where they're kind of driven in their obsession to try to like be famous or wealthy or powerful or something. And that rubs me the wrong way.
And you see that nowadays with reality TV shows and social mm-hmm. media influencers and people that are famous for literally doing nothing positive for society, just famous yeah. for probably looking good and advertising a branded item of clothing or something. So fame right. isn't always caught up to be.
I'm sure it isn't.
Unless
I'm,
you're a podcaster on the Trek FM networks.
Well, you know, there's different levels of fame. I mean, people know who we are because of this podcast, but it's not this. But like the way that I look at it is, yeah, this podcast is heard by, you know, quite a few people. There are a number of people that follow me on social media or whatever, but I don't do that because I'm interested in like being well known. I do it because I love what we do here and sharing it with people and interacting with people. It's not about being well known. It's about like the good time that you have talking about something that you love. So I think that's different. Whereas I've seen some people who go a certain pathway and they don't even really believe in it, but that's, they think the way to fame and power. So that especially bothers me. All right. Well, that's interesting to find all that stuff out. So if you'd like to send us an email, maybe about a Dr. Stubbs type that you've known or something about the deleted scenes today or something else, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not going to the replicator to get some hot chocolate and nothing bad happening to you?
Excellent. Well, when I'm not doing that, I guess I'm having bad stuff happen to me. But the good things are that I am on the network here on The Edge, which talks about Star Trek Discovery with my good friend, Pat Devlin. I am also on the Fandom Podcast Network on the talking about the Orville, which is why I talked about Scott Grimes and his character, Malloy, Gordon Malloy. So I'm over there. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place right here in the Babel Conference. So Joe, where can people contact you when you are not going to the holodeck to go skiing?
Do you know what? I tried skiing when I was in high school and it wasn't even a real ski slope. It was a dry slope with like really hard plastic bristles as the slope. And it was entirely unpleasant. It wasn't even cold, which skiing should be. They have these ski lifts, like it's a pole with a disc at the bottom and you pull the pole down and you put it in between your legs so you're sitting on the disc and it drags you and the skis up the hill so you can then ski down. But I was a young teenager, very weak, physically weak, and I couldn't pull it down and it was kind of really elastic and it sprung back up and it hit me in the chin and I nearly bit my tongue off. So spoiled. So thanks for bringing that memory back to me, Amy. However, my new favorite way to be contacted is my email, joepodcasts@gmail.com. I got an email during the week, which was literally the highlight of my year. So thanks for that. You can get me on Twitter at joeyjoe77uk. And you can also get me on the Babel Conference. And I'm getting better at using Twitter.
And if I don't, saw that. You're a little more active.
I'm trying. I still don't quite get what it is or what the purpose is. I know it's for social media communication. I don't understand Facebook and all its ins and outs, but Twitter's like a foreign language to me.
It's the opposite for me. I enjoy Twitter a lot more than Facebook.
Okay, I'm getting used to it. I just click the heart on anytime I see a blank heart, I click it. I think that's just the way I'm going to start using it, and then I'll start replying.
Be careful what you like.
Oh no, if it's like an Earl Grey comment, I will just naturally like otherwise my co-hosts will message me saying you better go on Twitter because people are contacting you, and I'll be like, oh okay, I'll do that. So that's where you can get me. And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not waiting on them to climb you because you're a mountain?
Oh, God, don't even say that. I am not waiting for that. So when I'm not doing that, which is always...
All the time.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. So guys, how about this? I am just about, well, I'll see when I have time, but by the time this episode airs on the 23rd, I will have finished my TNG rewatch that started in May of 2017. I've been a little bit busy with this podcasting thing, so I'm going to be tweeting about all good things. I plan on having a nice long thread about it because it's so amazing. But anyway, and then I'll have to find something else to do. But you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
I would like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Jim McMahon, and me. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Things are only impossible until they're not.
Even my sensory perception picked that up.
Great joy and gratitude.
I feel like this was part... Sorry, I have dogs. Jidzia, yeah, stop it. Stop it. Ewan's not home. Ewan's at work at the moment, so I'm having to try and entertain them. Shh, please. I'm trying to podcast. Thank you. Don't dare. She's looking at me saying, I'm going to bark. I'm going to bark.
Oh, yep.
Come here. Jads, sorry.
No, that's okay. Sometimes I have to do that with my cat where I have to like pet her while I'm talking.
Okay. Jad's right. You come over here. Sit down. Lie down. Good dog, dog. Lie down beside me. Come on. There you go. There you go. There we go.